you now.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tony Pennicow.
All right. Would that be the business of radio show hosting?
I don't know. Whatever business I'm in, I just automatically anoint myself number one.
All right.
I could be like, you know, Bronco bull riding. I'm number one. I've never done it before, but I'm the best. I stole it from Muhammad Ali. They were asking many, many, many years ago. I guess it was when he was champ, or maybe his first title reign, or maybe in the 70s, I don't remember. But they were asking about the sport of tennis. Tennis or golf? Because I've never played, but I'm the best.
All right.
Well, that's what I bring to the show, the best.
He is known as the greatest. And, man, whoa. I just logged on to SureDog.com to get the MMA fights up here. They got a damn good sponsor. Girls Gone Wild, all over the front page.
That's a very good sponsor. I like it already.
Yeah. Mighty good pictures. Anyway, I'm still out here in La La Land, Vegas.
Oh, dear Lord.
And I just had my television debut last night. It's going to air again tomorrow during Good Morning, Good Day, L.A., it's called, on Fox News 11. Has nothing to do with the fight game, unfortunately, so I don't really want to get into too much detail.
So basically what you're saying is you're not going to be getting a plug.
No. But anyway, it was a good story. It is related to some sort of fighting, legal fighting, I guess, if you want to call it that. But it's a case where I'm writing a book about this lady who's a victim of bad plastic surgery and just been complaining about it online for years and years and years. And the doctor who did the last operation sued her to keep her quiet. And next thing you know, it was a two-year case. I'm still fighting it. It's in the appeals court right now. And I handle all her legal documentation. So they actually called me.
That was the woman in Indiana, right?
Right. Indianapolis is the actual city. And the judge, it's like the Southern District of Indiana. Turned out the judge was connected to the doctor. She's on the board of directors for the same company that provides his health insurance and that he pays rent to for his facilities, and wouldn't get the judge off of it. But the actual airing was more just about, you know, her experience with plastic surgery. Didn't really mention the case at all, even though I tried to get it in there without mentioning the doctors and names. They had to cut my portion short, but they started off the whole thing with a little piece of me saying something and then ended it with me saying something about who she was. So it was pretty good, and, you know, they're talking about making it national. So in the long run, the national exposure will just bring more people to our site, because if you do a search for my name, all my sites come up. You know, of course, ScienceSucks.com shows up first on Google anyway, but, you know, the Fight News Unlimited comes up number two or number three usually, so, you know, we're gonna probably see a big explosion in viewership if that happens. But you can watch it tomorrow on Good Day LA. If you go to myfoxla.com, I believe, is the website. And you can actually watch it all throughout the day if you miss it in the morning, you know, because of the time difference or whatever. But it's myfoxla.com is the website. And then you just go to go live newscasts. There's like, let's see, five buttons on the right-hand side at the top. And one of them is usually Good Day LA. It's going to be tomorrow morning from 7 to 10 a.m. They have that going, and then throughout the day they have the replays. So check that out if you get a chance. You can see rabble-rousing Rich Bergeron in his news debut. You know, I was on the local news in Massachusetts before, in high school. It wasn't quite as big a story, though. But anyway, other than that, we have obviously we have UFC 127 coming up this weekend. We don't have a particular guest for tonight at this moment, but we have feelers out. You put the emergency word out earlier this afternoon. I tried to get Joey I actually yesterday. I was thinking about it yesterday, and I figured Joey I would be a lock. I mean, I made that assumption, but he's not going to be ready till next week, so we'll have him definitely next week. But we're working on getting somebody from the East Coast there through a guy that has an email, phillyboxing@gmail.com. He's trying to steal your legacy there, Tony.
I know. What's up with that?
Tony has a very similar email address. That's why I mentioned.
Yeah, except mine, which I developed back in like 1998 when I was first logging on to AOL, and I was typing it up. It was going to be like, you know, because you were setting up an AOL account and it was going to be default. And, you know, I'm dumb and I didn't know how to do half the shit, and I typed it in, and then I come to realize that I didn't put an I in Philly. So like when I had given out my card and everything, I showed it to people, like, listen, that's not a typo. There's no I in Philly. They go, oh, you know, you made, you never responded to me. And then get other that you wish don't email you, because they never stop emailing you. They drive you nuts. But yeah, that's mine is PhillyBox1. It's PHLLY. I do want to mention something though. I did have before I cover any pro fights. I just want to mention the fight card I had a chance to go up to last week. My alma mater, Lock Haven University. Had a great time. It's always good to get back. And one I gotta say is they Lock Haven does a tremendous job in showing respect to the alumni fighters, more than any program that I'm aware of. I know Penn State, you know, really doesn't. You don't see a lot of the alumni fighters, unless they're from State College, ever go off to Penn State. I know after I had graduated from Lock Haven, and that 2 months later was the Penn State home show, because I graduated in December. and I went up. It was like late January, early February. I don't exactly remember. But there was no Penn State alumni fighters there. I mean, it was current fighters, obviously. I was like the only alumni there, and I was from another school, and I was, you know, cheering on my boys and my teammates. But, I mean, Lock Haven does a first-class, you know, show. Dr. Cox is there. He doesn't really coach the team anymore. He's pretty much stepped down. He's retired. So he wasn't working in the corners. That was left up to Coach Coop and John Stout, who's now the assistant coach. And but Doc was there. His wife was there. Coop was there. I'll say about a good 15, 20 alumni fighters, guys that were from the first team back in 1979, fighters from the 80s that are, you know, now thinning hair, like I guess like myself, hair is thinning and a little thicker on the waistline. Oh, we're all talking about our old glory days, and, you know, a bunch of pictures were taken, and so it was really great. Like I said, about a good 15, 20 alumni fighters there. And afterwards, we moved the party to the Sons of Italy in Lock Haven, which I am a member. And the Coast Guard team was there, who I've become very good friends with. We all stayed at the same hotel. And, you know, there was food, there was drinks, and a lot of, you know, the old fighters, they were all, you know, swapping old war stories and talking the jokes and everybody doing their best Dr. Cox impersonation, which obviously had people rolling on the floor. And Coach Coop was there, and actually, I felt really good because Coop really heaped a lot of praise, you know, on me. I wasn't one of the Haven's national champions. I was a two-time All-American. But, you know, being surrounded there by guys that really felt with the face of the program for 30 years, you know, Coop was really talking me up, and he's like, yeah, he goes, one thing that Penny, he would fight anybody. Just say, Penny, this week we need you to, you know, fight at this weight class against whoever. You know, he's a national champion. He's an All-American. He's a heavyweight. Okay, Coach. He just didn't care. He was a knucklehead. And I still, I admitted that it was only a self-imposed, not award, but a self-imposed trivia that I'm the only guy in college boxing history to fight in five weight classes in one semester, which is a three-month span. And, of course, I did it in 2 months because from April, mid-April till the end of the semester in May, we didn't have any fights. So, you know, I basically did it from February to mid-April. And I said, I can't prove that I'm the only guy that did it, but there cannot be possibly anybody else in this world stupid enough to ever try something like that. And everybody pretty much agreed that I would be the only person stupid enough to ever try something like that.
I guess so. I don't know. Just no one else has, so. Well, I don't know about stupid.
Yeah.
But, brave.
No, Rich, it was a good show. The only thing that really marred it, the Lock Haven team, it's a very young team. All the guys that were on the team last year that I helped come up and train, none of them were on the team again. So, I mean, so they're basically rebuilding a brand new team, a lot of young guys, and some of the guys did pretty good. The one guy pulled a no moss. He took a few shots in the first round, and he's like, all right, that's enough of that. And that kind of bothered me a little bit, only because, you know, I was the guy, I had my lip ripped in half, had my nose busted up, fought with two hands throbbing, that I couldn't even close them. So a quick job like that kind of bothered me. And what also bothered me was, and the main event was a pretty good fight between a young kid from Lock Haven, I believe he's a freshman, and a young kid from IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And they were going at it tooth and nail. And the LHU kid was doing pretty well early. He started to run out of gas midway through the second round. And, you know, his punches were getting very wide. They were getting very slow. The IUP kid was also tired, but, you know, he was just a little bit better and a little bit crisper down the stretch, and he was able to score a standing eight count, and he was able to win the fight on a 3-2 split decision. Hey, you know what? I lost my first fight at Lock Haven, too. You know, I ran out of gas. I got tired. I lost, you know, to a kid that was All-American. Well, what really marred the whole show was this kid's mother
after the fights were over, was down on the floor screaming and cursing at Coach Coop, you know, calling this, calling him that, using offensive language. And people were taken back. I didn't see it as it happened. I heard about it. People were looking at her. And Coop handled it like a professional. And everybody's asking, what the hell is that all about? What was that all about? And I eventually come to find out, because Coop wouldn't say anything, but I eventually come to find out from someone that could hear it that she was mad because her son was tired and Coop wasn't having him sit down between rounds. And she thought that was not fair because he was tired. And actually, that really offended me. And it offended me not only because she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about, but number two was, we stop sitting on stools between rounds unless you were hurt or unless, you know, you really had a hard time making weight and we wanted to preserve your legs. We stopped doing that in 1995. And I know because I was part of the committee that voted on it to start standing between rounds. For two reasons. Number one, all the military academies were doing it at the time, and I think a lot of them still do. Army, Navy, Air Force, I don't know if BMI was doing it, but knowing Coach Calkins, it wouldn't surprise me. Standing up between rounds. What?
I don't remember standing, but I know George Foreman
used to always do that. Yeah, exactly. Standing between rounds. I kind of thought BMI did it because I know Gordy, and he would have you stand. So, and those things, like, the doc was saying one day, we got back from a show, and he goes, you know what? And he goes, I was watching, and he goes, you ever see the way the military guy do it? And Dr. Cox being an old Army guy, they stand between rounds. And it just gives them this feeling of superiority. You know, like, yeah, I don't need to sit down. And you're looking down on your opponent and sitting down, and he's tired, and you're standing. And I was like, I'd like to try it. Sure, why not? And I remember the first time I did it, you know, went back to the corner. I leaned back, you know, I took the weight off my legs, I leaned back in the corner, crossed my arms in front of my, in front of my chest, and I just breathed as deep as I could. I said, you know what, this feels great. I said, I love this. I said, there's the reason I didn't like sitting down. I was like, one, you sit down and that protective cup kind of jams up into your stomach and your diaphragm, and I thought it made it harder to breathe. And number two, it was like, when you're sitting down and you're tired, you don't want to get back up. I remember the one time they had to actually drag me back up off the stool. I was so damn tired. And I said, I don't want to sit down anymore. So starting my sophomore year, I only ever sat down two more times the rest of my career. That was when I had to cut my weight down to 165, and my legs were so dead they didn't want me standing between rounds. And one time in a fight my senior year, I wanted to stand, and it was a back-and-forth fight. And I caught with a good shot, and they gave me an 8 count. And I went back to the corner, and I was like, no, I want to stand. They're like, no, sit. I'm like, no, I want to stand. They're like, and Coop's like, sit the fuck down. And they just sit down. But after that round, you know, I fought the next, it was the first round. Second round, I fought fine. They let me stand going into the third. But like, this kid's mother, she didn't know what she was talking about. She was ugly. You know, so I don't like people that are rude, that don't know what they're talking about, especially if you're ugly, it makes it even worse. Oh, and Rich, did you happen to follow the fight from Friday night on ESPN2?
No, I did not, unfortunately.
Did you happen to read any of the results?
Not at all.
Two things I want to bring up. First of all, we have the I didn't get to see, you know, obviously I watched the fights, but since I don't have a 3D capable TV with glasses in a box, I had to watch them in 2D. And they were, you know, they were okay. I mean, nothing spectacular. They were decent fights, not great. The fighter featured recent issue of the Ring magazine as a new fighter to watch. Goes by the name of the Mama's Boy. You ever hear of him? You never heard of the Mama's Boy? We interviewed him last week, Rich. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I just accidentally shut off my microphone there. But yeah,
okay.
I know the Mama's Boy. We interviewed him last week. Just had to drop.
Yes, we did.
Mama's Boy went into Friday night with an undefeated record. Mama's Boy is no longer undefeated.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Got knocked out two rounds. Two or three rounds. I was reading one recap, and it said, you know, it lost by second round stoppage. But then I was reading, it was like, yeah, and he got caught in the third round, and he got stunned, and they ended up stopping the fight. So either second round or third round, he got stopped. And Mama's Boy is no longer undefeated.
Well, you know, you got to lose sometime. So, you know,
Rocky Marciano didn't.
Well, he was the exception to the rule, I guess, you know. But I think it's nice. Not nice, but, I mean, it's a good thing sometimes for guys to lose young in their career. Not quite, you know, in the title level yet. So that, you know, they don't go into those title fights thinking they can't lose, you know, or not prepared to lose if it happens that way. And, you know, in that situation, he's an up-and-coming kid. He's tough. He's smart. He's going to learn from it. You know, and like one thing we used to always say at military school is, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So.
Yeah. That'll do it, you know?
It's unfortunate to hear, but I'm sure he'll pick himself up and keep going. And, you know, we'll hear about him in a good way next time he fights, hopefully. But I'm just looking at the schedule ahead here for boxing, and I found out that James Toney is fighting tonight on Fox. Did you know this?
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was actually kind of just interesting enough watching a video yesterday of this supposed closed-door meeting between Tony and Dana White when he was trying to get into the UFC. And I thought it was kind of funny because Dana's, like, asking him, well, can you wrestle? You know? And then, you know, James says something like, oh, you're going to see some surprises. And then he looks at the manager and he goes, can he wrestle? And James is like, what are you asking him for, yo? Really pissed off about that. Anyway, Tony, 72-6 with 3 draws, 44 knockouts. He's fighting Damon Reed, 45-14 with 32 knockouts for the IBA heavyweight title in San Manuel Indian Casino in San Bernardino, California. And so it's actually probably coming up pretty shortly here. I'm probably going to be starting that card since it's on the West Coast here. But that's interesting. See if he's really on the comeback trail or if he's on his way out, I guess. That's a pretty good opponent for him. Record-wise, anyway. I don't know about skill-wise quite yet. But before I continue on the schedule here, I did want to mention there's a couple stories about women in wrestling that have been making the news this last week. First of all, the Iowa State Wrestling Tournament made big news last week when two girls qualified for the tournament. And it was the first time any girls had competed in the 91-year history of the event. But one girl, Kathy Herkelman, is a 14-year-old freshman who was matched up against Joel Northrup, a 16-year-old, and Northrup refused to wrestle her and forfeited the match. And his reasons is, quoted in this article, wrestling is a combat sport and it can get violent at times. As a matter of conscience and my faith, I do not believe that it is appropriate for a boy to engage a girl in this manner. And interestingly enough, his father is a minister. And the father added, we believe in the elevation and respect of women, and we don't think that wrestling a woman is the right thing to do. Body slamming and takedowns, full contact sport is not how to do that. Well, it depends on what you mean. Elevation of a woman. You pick her up, yeah, that's elevating her. No, but that story just broke last week. It was in a bunch of my Google alerts for wrestling, so it's gotten a lot of play. But it brings back a lot of memories because back when I was in high school, and one of the reasons why we always try to highlight women in combat sports whenever possible is because I watched personally one of the first girls to ever wrestle at the high school level in her first varsity match even, I got to see. And she was really the first girl ever in Massachusetts that I had ever heard of who wrestled. And she went on to wrestle for Harvard and wrote a book about it. Her name was Laura Lee Summer. She had purple hair, and she was kind of a standout.
Nice.
Really smart girl. And I can never forget the first girl she, the first guy she beat. And, you know, all the cackling and everything and the harassment he got after losing that match. It was just a JV match, but still. You know, so in some ways I see, you know, this kid obviously had some issues with his faith and everything like that. Didn't agree with him in wrestling. But this other story that comes out, ironically, in the same email blast for the Google alerts on wrestling, there's a group of 7 local girls out in California who are going to take part in the inaugural CIF State Girls Wrestling State Invitational. So in California, at least, or in this area of California, Lemoore, I guess, is Lemoore High is where it's going to be held. You know, obviously they have enough girls competing that they can have an invitation. So that's encouraging, you know. Obviously, it's going to be a sport that's integrated for a lot longer, but I think it's getting to the point where you've got wrestling being such a big factor in MMA and women in that sport starting to gain more credibility and the ranks growing deeper and deeper there. So I think this is just a trend that you know, more women MMA fighters in the long run. If these girls keep getting involved and keep trying to prove themselves in wrestling against guys, you know, think about that. You know, you get through all your wrestling career in high school, you're a girl going against guys the whole time, and then you go to MMA and you're facing women. You know, how can you be prepared more? It's pretty amazing, I think. But this tournament is going to be Friday and Saturday at Lemoore High in California. And there's a bunch of girls competing. There's an article at logb.com, Modesto B. So check that out if you want to read the whole story. I thought I'd mention that because it's you know, something that's near and dear to our hearts here at Fight News Unlimited. And we got to appreciate the women. Equal opportunity, all that stuff.
Absolutely.
And if women want to go in there and wrestle with guys, hey, why should we stop them? As far as boxing goes, let's finish up with that. We got a lot of fights going on Friday. Friday night fights this week is pretty exciting. Yeah, let's see if I can find it. I just had it here. Well, there it is. Another one on Friday, I'll mention first. We have the Jesus fight of the week here. Jesus Baboon, 16-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Americo at Santos, 26-3 with 22 knockouts, one draw for the vacant WBO Latino light welterweight title. It's going to be on Telemundo tomorrow night. It's in Florida. Palm Bay, Florida, at the Palm Bay Center. All right. Also, we have the mismatch of the week right after that, also on Friday. And it's in Atlanta, Georgia. For once, we got a mismatch of the week on American soil. This one's not as bad as some of the old ones we've had, but it seems pretty lopsided. Anyway, it's Antonio Davis at featherweight fighting a 6-rounder. He's 26-6 with 13 knockouts, fighting Jamar Saunders, who is 5-9 with 2 knockouts. Quite the mismatch, I think, and it's the headlining fight, which makes it even worse. But here we go. One in Delaware at the Dover Downs Hotel and Casino. We have a pretty interesting main event there. We have Michael Stewart, 46-7, 24 knockouts.
I know Mike Stewart, and I actually know his brother relatively well.
Well, he's fighting for the vacant NABA light welterweight title against David Torres, who's 21-2 with 13 knockouts, one draw.
Mike Stewart, he's a tough kid. You know, he's on the 1 year of the contender. But what I'm a little bit worried about is he has been in a lot of wars. He's been in some tough fights. The fight with Ricky Hatton, I guess, back in the earlier part of the decade, I guess around 03 or 04, was particularly rough. I remember after it was over, and they were interviewing Mike Stewart, Hatton stopped him in like 4 or 5 rounds, and they asked Stewart if he thought his nose was broken. He goes, "I think a lot of things are broken right now." But Mike's been in a lot of wars. One of his later fights that he really got roughed up pretty good, and I can't remember. Him and his brother, they're just tough, no-nonsense guys, and, you know, it's like you don't know how much more, you know, they can really take.
All right. We'll see what else we got here. We have the Friday night fight here. We got Juan Carlos Burgos, super featherweight, 25-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Frankie Archuleta, 27-7.
Archuleta's a pretty good fighter. I think he's a little bit past his prime, though, but, you know, he's an interesting kid to watch.
So that's on ESPN 2 tomorrow night. It's at the Million Dollar Elm Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It must be a pretty nice elm if it's worth $1 million. We also have a pretty interesting undercard match, super middleweight Maxime Vlasov, who's 19-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Isaac Chalemba, who's 15-1 with 1 draw and 8 knockouts. So, yes, pretty good card all around. Actually, Harry Joe Yorgi is on the card as well.
Yeah, he's on the non-televised portion of it. I haven't talked to Harry in a while. Even after his loss last year, this is his first fight back, and a friend of mine actually golfed with Harry's father, and he said Harry had hurt his ankle before that fight and was really hampered in his movement. I don't know the validity of that, but a good friend of mine that I work with actually was golfing with Harry for a while. And I even said, I called him up the one day when we were at work. I called him on his cell phone and said, "Hey, you know your boy Harry's fighting some weekend?" He's like, "No." I said, "Yeah, good friend you are, I see."
He's fighting a guy that looks like that was maybe just thrown in the mix just to give him a comeback fight. This Jeremy Steers is his opponent. He's 9-8. He's been knocked out 6 out of his 8 losses. So I think this is just kind of a flutter up fight for Harry Joe, who's 22-1, 1 draw, 10 knockouts, and just to get back in the game. It's only an 8-rounder, so he's used to going a little deeper than that. But another former guest of ours is also fighting tomorrow night in California, in San Diego, at the Four Points Sheraton Hotel. Danny Garcia, he's now 19.
Yeah, Billy kid.
Yeah, 19-0. 13 knockouts, fighting John Figueroa, who's 7-8, 3 draws, 3 knockouts. So it's another type of build-up fight, I think, for Danny. But
Danny's progressing his career very nicely. Golden Boy's doing a good job with him. You know, he's stepping up slowly but surely. Getting matched up with some better competition. Just getting a little bit smarter, a little bit better with each fight. I'll say give Danny about, not to rush him in, give him about maybe a year and a half to 2 years. And he can definitely be a threat to any champion out there.
Yeah, I think so too. He's just keeping that undefeated record intact. He's bound to get into the title mix within a couple of years, like you said. I would think that he'd have at least a national title to claim for his own. And then he keeps improving like he has been, and world title isn't too far away from that. But it all depends usually on how much you fight in a year. I don't know how much he usually fights. You got to have like 4 or 5 fights in a year to start really moving. But anyway, let's see what else we got. Saturday. pretty interesting.
Don't forget about the big title fight last weekend.
Big title fight last weekend. What'd I miss?
Flash, baby.
Donito Donaire?
Yeah.
Oh, he fought. He's a good fighter. He was the first guy to
beat. He fought Fernando Montiel. You know, they're matching up. You know, it was a highly anticipated fight. You know, two top guys going at it. Donaire crushed him at one punch in the second round.
Yeah, Nonito beat everybody when he beat the praying.
Darchinian?
Yeah, Darchinian. And he was just avenging his brother. You know, his brother was supposed to.
Yeah, really.
And Nonito came out of nowhere. But it was kind of funny because, the white collar brawler show that we were plugging for a while, we had the guys on there on the show. Well, what happened was at one point in the show, they went to Nonito Donaire Sr. because the Donaire that's fighting now is a junior, but they went to his gym to train with him. So that was kind of interesting. There's a whole clip on that show about I think it was just one of the guys went there, but might have been both guys, I forget. But they did have the senior on there, so this is a whole family of fighters, really, because the father fought as well, and now he trains. So that's a great story. Glad to hear that he's still winning. But really, he was such an unknown when he fought Darchinian. And then, boom, just upsets him like that. He's got hard hands. I mean, that's the thing that really surprises people. For such a small guy, he's got some hard, heavy hands hitting people.
Yeah.
Like cinder blocks.
You love people like that.
He's developed a real talent for, they call it striking in MMA, but incredible knockout power, obviously. It only took him to the third round to knock out Montiel. That's pretty intense. Any other interesting fights on that card? I didn't even pay any attention to the results, unfortunately. So busy. Were there any other good fights, Tony?
Well, Mike Jones out of Philadelphia had a very tough fight a few months ago against Jesus Soto Carras, and a lot of people thought Carras had won that fight. So they fought a rematch, this time on the undercard of Nonito Donaire and Montiel, fought out in Vegas, and Jones won it was a tough fight. It was a very tough fight. Obviously, there was no walk in the park, but Jones outboxed him. He showed some pretty good skills, better speed, and then was able to walk out of there with a 12-round decision.
Well, we got sort of an interesting fight here in Mexico on Saturday between Gilberto Kebbas, who's 34-20, 4 draws, 21 knockouts, fighting Jose Antonio Aguirre, who's 35-9 with 1 draw, 21 knockouts. That's for the WBC light flyweight title. And then there's another fight between Wilbert Wiekob at flyweight. He's 30-5, 18 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Edwin Diaz, who's 12-16, 5 knockouts. That's for the WBC silver flyweight title. Whatever that means. WBC is.
I love how they put our colors with the belts now. You have gold belts, diamond belts, silver belts.
Where's the platinum belt? That's
I'm sure that's next.
I just gave Jose Suleiman another idea for the sanctioning fee.
That's the truth. And you're going to have this. You know, pretty soon, we'll be putting out there like, okay, we got the, let's use the WBC because we're talking about Jose Suleiman. But we can obviously use the WBA because WBA, I think, is even worse. Let's say, okay, we got. I would say middleweight. We got so-and-so. He's the WBA middleweight champion of the world. Then we have so-and-so, who's the WBA interim middleweight champion of the world. So he's the middleweight champion of the world, while the other guy is not the middleweight champion of the world, while he still is. Then we have the WBA super, the, because he's not WBA middleweight super champion of the world. Then you have the WBA diamond middleweight champion of the world. Now, I'm like saying, I'm choosing WBA, but I know one has the diamond, one has the super. I'm sure one's going to have a platinum. I'm sure one's going to have a gold. You know, it's a, Jesus Christ, not to be one champion per division. That's why I go to Ring Magazine. Ring Magazine tells you, this is the man who beat the man. We got two champions. You know, they unify the title. The number one and two, number one and two guys fight. So we got a guy, he's the champ of the world. And, you know, and we'll say Bernard Hopkins was champ of the world because he unified all the belts, and he was the number one guy. And even though it was a bullshit decision, Kelly Pavlik, not Kelly Pavlik, Jermaine Taylor beat Bernard Hopkins. And Kelly Pavlik went out and beat Jermaine Taylor. Well, you know what? That made him the man. And now that Sergio Martinez went out and beat the man that was the man, he's the middleweight champion of the world. None of this Felix Sturm out of Germany that never fights in the States because he got screwed one time. Not to mention all the fighters that ever went over to Germany and got screwed over the years. cough, cough, anybody that fought Kazanati. Don't get me started on that. But they got to start going more to what the Ring Magazine is saying. One champion, one division, one belt. The Ring Magazine guy is the real man.
All right. Well, we do have a couple other...
You don't get them belts handed to you.
Yeah.
You got to win them.
Yeah,
Rocky Balboa had the Ring Magazine belt.
Yeah, it used to be one champion, too. That was nice.
Yeah. It was nice.
There's a point to it in some respects. You know, you gotta give these kids coming up something to fight for. You know, it's something like...
Oh!
Yeah. There is some reasoning. It's not always the best reasoning, but, you know, it is a little bit of an incentive for kids to fight and get something. You know, if they never get a world title that they can get, you know, they can get some claim to fame. But I agree with you with most of that. Anyway, we got Gary Shaw Productions on Showtime this Saturday as well from Nebraska. Antonio DeMarco at lightweight is the main event. 24-2 with 18 knockouts, one draw, fighting Reyes Sanchez, who's 20-3 with 11 knockouts, one draw, fighting for the WBC silver welterweight lightweight title. Sorry.
DeMarco's a hell of a fighter. He lost that fight to Edwin Valero a year or so ago before you know, Valero went nutty and, you know, killed himself.
Right. Then we have, it's kind of funny, there's a cruiserweight fight between two guys with over 30 wins, but it's only a six-rounder. We got Alejandro Berrio, who's 31-5 with 28 knockouts, fighting Antoine Eccles. 33-15 with 28
knockouts. Oh, Jesus Christ. After he start fighting?
Yeah. Maybe that's why.
My grandfather's still alive. He would have told you about when he watched Eccles fight as a kid. Yeah, Eccles definitely was a downside of his career, man. I remember him fighting Bernard Hopkins. And Bernard Hopkins was in like his fourth or fifth middleweight title defense, and this guy made 20.
Right. Another interesting fight. It's not really, you know, much of a competition here, but I've never seen a record like this. This is a first for me. We have Freddie Hernandez, who's 29-2 with 20 knockouts at light middleweight, fighting Roberto Valenzuela, who's 56-56 with two draws and 46 knockouts. Been knocked out 20 times.
Either unless the fight ends in a draw, you won't have a strict 500 record anymore.
Yeah, right. That's wild. 50 wins, 50 losses. Who does that? He does it.
Yeah.
But one fight I probably should be going to, but I don't think I am. We have another Showtime card at the Palms Casino Resort on Saturday in Vegas here. And I just actually tried to get Lee Samuels from Top Rank to get us a guest for tonight's show, but he wasn't able to get anybody, but I called him up, sent him an email. He's probably pretty busy preparing for that fight. But Top Rank and Bob Arum are promoting it. And the Miguel Acosta, who's 28-3 with 22 knockouts, 2 draws, and he's fighting Brandon Rios, who's 26-0, 19 knockouts and 1 draw, and that is for the WBA World Lightweight title. And also there's a pretty good fight at featherweight, 8-rounder, Robert Marroquin, who's 18-0, 14 knockouts, fighting Gilberto Sanchez Leon, who's 30-7, 2 draws, 10 knockouts. That about does it for the boxing for the week. Other than one other fight that I want to mention down in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, on Saturday. We have Travis Walker at heavyweight, the main event, who's 34-6 with 28 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Darnell Wilson, who's 23-10 with 20 knockouts, 3 draws.
Is that my man?
Yeah, that's one of those wild. And here's something interesting. You also have a heavyweight fight on that card. Gabe Brown, 18-13, with 12 knockouts, 4 draws, fighting Burt Cooper, 37-12.
Are you kidding me?
31 knockouts. When was the last time he fought? In the 80s? I don't know. I got to check that out.
Burt Cooper.
Burt
Cooper. He's got to be pushing 50. I'm not kidding about that, Rich. Look up at his age. He's got to be pushing 50. I saw the first fight 45. Card I went to.
Don't just
what?
He's 45, according to
boxing. I'm honestly, Rich, I swear to God, I'm honestly surprised. Because I remember him fighting on ESPN, not ESPN, ABC. I had the fight on tape because it was like my dad used to tape a lot of like the afternoon fights. And it was on one of his tapes, and it was like one of my wrestling tapes. So I had some wrestling matches on there. He had some fights on there. And this was back in, like, 1986, because on this tape, and like I said, I wasn't even really watching the fights at the time. I was watching wrestling. I had Hulk Hogan wrestling Paul Orndorff in a cage, and my dad had on the tape Burt Cooper knocking somebody out, and a young, maybe in his 15th pro fight, Vinny Pazienza. Yeah, pretty amazing. But yeah, I mean, like, shit, I remember Burt Cooper losing to George Foreman in, like, 1989. I remember him damn near beating Evander Holyfield in, like, 91. And Cooper was the fight that I went to, like, my first fight card in 1992 when it was, I think it was, like, Ring Magazine Fight of the Year against Michael Moore. 1992. Rich, that's 19 years ago, almost, that I went down to see this guy fight live.
Yeah, actually, he's been out of the game for 8 years. He actually came...
He hasn't fought in 8 years?
No,
I didn't know that.
He did fight in June of 2010 against the guy who was 3-6 and 300 pounds, Corey Winfield, and he beat him KO in the sixth.
I would hope so.
Before that, he last fought in 2002 in September, and he was knocked out in the fourth round at the Blue Horizon, believe it or not.
You happen to, who's he fighting there?
He was fighting Darryl Wilson, September of 2002. And he actually is from Philadelphia. He's from Sharon Hill.
Well, he's from Sharon Hill. Yeah, Sharon Hill is a suburb of Philadelphia. I remember when I started at Lock Haven in 1994, one of my boxing teammates there, this kid Dwayne, was from Sharon Hill. And I remember him telling me, he goes, yeah, I would always see Burt Cooper, you know, training around the area and everything. And this was before I met Burt Cooper. He goes, yeah, because I'd see Burt, you know, jogging down the street. He'd be doing his morning road work drinking a 40. Yeah, swear to God. My friend Dwayne told me that in Lock Haven. Because he like said, and I met Burt, I guess it was back around maybe 98, when I was training at that Marian Anderson Rec Center. He had come down, you know, a few times to do some sparring. I only got to, like, talk to him, like, hey, how you doing? God, I didn't want to say, you know, you were the first fight I went to. You got your ass knocked out cold. You was KO's magazine or Ring Magazine Fight of the Year. Congratulations, you lost. But no, I mean, Burt was a good guy. I mean, he was down at the gym, and he had a lot of problems early in his career. A lot of problems. I mean, you know, Joe Frazier trained him, and
Joe got so disgusted with him that, you know, him and Marvis actually, you know, parted ways with him. You know, just because Bert was into the drug scene and, you know, one fight he'd be great and one fight he would just be atrocious. You know, he was really up and down, you know, kind of a guy. And what was really funny, I remember reading about Bert Cooper, was he was really having, you know, some trouble, you know, in his career after, you know, he broke off with the Frasers. And I remember we talked about this guy a couple times on the show. Remember we always talked about the fighter that's in jail for shooting the promoter that was threatening his family?
Right.
Yeah, well, he was also Bert Cooper's promoter. Rick Parker. He was Bert Cooper's promoter, and Cooper was so disgusted with him. Cooper was like, he lost the fight, and he goes, yeah, he goes, I'm blaming Rick Parker. He made me brain tired.
But, yeah, that's kind of funny that you mentioned that the 40 thing, because, you know, the old stereotype of the Marine is, you know, running with a cigar. And this boxer I know, another Tony, actually, the guy that was training me for a while up in Brockton, John O'Brien. Tony Petronelli.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was associated with Hagler.
Yeah, he runs with the cigar.
So,
it's a true stereotype.
I can smoke a cigar every so often, you know, but when I'm running, that's pretty much the last type of flavor I want in the mouth.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't want, you know, I mean, it's hard enough to smoke one of them when you're just sitting there, much less when you're running and huffing and puffing.
That's kind of funny.
Take a deep breath, you inhale all that crap, you really be gagging.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we were just talking about earlier, Nonito Donaire. And apparently, there's a story here about how he's open to reconciling with his dad. I had no idea.
Yeah, I was reading that.
There's his former trainer. He says, I never close my door. Actually, I've always been something. They actually put the Filipino in there. We're supposed to be able to understand this. This is on CBNNews.com. They put the Filipino in there to finish his statement. How the hell am I supposed to translate that? But anyway, I just bought a Las Vegas home. So maybe I should go hunt him down. looks like he's trying to reconcile with his father. Don't hear senior.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you watch the build up towards that fight, you know, the other night, like they were showing, you know, he's like boxing wasn't fun anymore because you know he'd been doing it so long and everything had to be perfect, and it just was, you know, starting to wear him down.
Right. Well, we know if Floyd reconciled with his dad, we know where that got him.
Yeah, well, I don't know who's worse, the dad or the uncle. I can't tell you.
Right. But another guy, a legend in the sport, who's now long gone, Jack Johnson, is making the news this week in boxing because he's getting a pardon finally.
Finally, that's on.
You'd think Obama being the black president would rush in and do that right away, but all the pressure to act last year didn't work, and now all of a sudden he's decided to act on it, so I don't know what it took, but and I don't know what the timetable is, but it seems pretty definite that that's going to be the course of action in the future. They're going to give him a pardon, formal pardon, for violations of the Mann Act, which basically was brought against him, from the story goes that I heard, is because he was dating white women all the time and he flaunted it. And
well, you don't want to violate the Mann Act.
And I actually heard the Mann Act was used against Elliot Spitzer, you know, the New York governor who was sleeping with the prostitutes.
Yeah.
Because I guess he transported them over state lines or something, and that's the way the act works. I don't know why you would make a rule against that. I guess that was when times were different, but you can't transport a woman over state lines. But his Jack Johnson's story is pretty incredible. If you ever get a chance to watch the documentary or read about him, I highly recommend it. I saw something on HBO, I think, about him. That was unbelievable. Good stuff. And he actually inspired Muhammad Ali a lot. Muhammad Ali used to talk about him quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, Ali actually literally borrowed many of Jack Johnson's, isms. Sometimes not all for the good reason, too. I mean, Jack Johnson's a very controversial guy. I mean, and Ali kind of, you know, took that mold. Very flamboyant, very flashy. Definitely a lightning rod. And you either love him or you hate him. You know, a lot of guys, I'll tell you, my grandfather, my mother's father, who I never had the pleasure of meeting, he absolutely despised Ali. And I'm sure if he was alive back during the tenure of Jack Johnson, he would have despised him too.
Right.
And it wasn't, you know, and I know for my grandfather, it wasn't, a racially motivated thing. He was just anti his, you know, personality, his, you know, brashness, his cockiness. So I said, those are the reasons I'm sure he would have been anti Jack Johnson.
Well, anyway, that's the deal on that. We'll keep you updated on when he is formally pardoned for real. But we haven't really discussed MMA much tonight, so let me just cut to the chase and get to the UFC 127 card going on this Sunday. And if you want to go through the whole fight schedule for this week, just go to suredog.com/events, and you'll see there's about 50 fights. It's like ridiculous. I'm tight trying to read all these. And it's all over the place, from Chicago to England to Canada to Vermont to Tokyo. Pretty much everywhere there is fight. I think there's going to be a fight this weekend in MMA. I don't know why this weekend is so busy as opposed to every other weekend, but apparently it is. But UFC 127, we have the main event, BJ Penn versus John Fitch. And BJ Penn just had a bad rematch there with Frankie Edgar from New Jersey. Didn't do too hot there. But, you know, he's looking to make a comeback here against John Fitch, who we might know, or you might know, Tony, since you remember the interview with Bruce Buffer. He is the hardest name for Bruce Buffer. John Fitch. He's 23-3, Fitch is. And he's coming off a win against Thiago Alves at UFC 117 last August. He's also on a, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fight win streak. And in that streak, dating back to 2009, he beat Akihiro Gono, Paulo Thiago, Mike Pierce, which is on the show not too long ago, and Ben Saunders, in addition to Alves. And his last loss, Mr. George St. Pierre, who is literally the pound-for-pound best in the sport right now. And before that loss, had what looks like a dozen fight win streak here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 fight win streak. And before that, there was a no contest and a loss to Wilson Gouveia back in 2002. And then, of course, his only other loss was Mike Pyle in his debut back in 2002. And he's only lost once in the UFC since he got in there in October of 2005. And like I said, that was to George St. Pierre. So I really like Fitch to win this fight. I think BJ's on the tail end of his career. He's 16-7 with one draw. He beat Matt Hughes in his last fight, actually. He's not coming off that loss to Frankie Edgar. But Matt Hughes is also kind of... on his way out to pasture, I think. And, you know, these big names, everybody's still willing to watch them and see them on main event cards, but they're getting really outpaced by these younger guys. And even though Fitch has been around, I think, just as long as Penn, well, actually, Penn's been around a little bit longer because he started in 2001. Against Joey Gilbert, believe it or not.
Right.
not the Joey Gilbert we know, but another guy. That guy's from Chicago. But, yeah, BJ actually had that tough back-to-back losses to Edgar, who was one of those young and up-and-coming guys that really surprised him, the overall style. And, of course, BJ also has a loss to George St. Pierre from back in January of 2009 at UFC 94. And this time, he's going to be facing a guy, John Fitch, who's got a pretty decent record, a lot of skills. And I don't think he's going to win. I really don't. He really surprised Matthews. We didn't really get to see, you know, how much of his game was improved. We just got to see that he had knockout power in his punches against Hughes, but it only lasted 21 seconds. So, you know, you could really say that Hughes just got caught off guard, made a big mistake. But then again, you know, maybe BJ Penn didn't prove that much. We don't know. We'll have to see in this fight. It'll really test him if he does have the what it takes to win there. Then we have an old Massachusetts guy coming back to the main stage in the co-main event. We got Jorge Rivera facing Michael Bisping, right, from the Count from England. The Count Bisping had a couple wins back-to-back against Dan Miller and Yoshihiro Akiyama. And his last fight was UFC 120 against Akiyama. He won in round three. After round three by decision, all his last three fights went to decision. He lost to Wanderlei Silva back in February of last year, about a year ago, a little over a year ago. But other than that, he's been doing all right. Back in 2009, he lost to Dan Henderson, who eventually went to Strikeforce. And Rashad Evans, he had a loss to back in 2007, but he's got quite a lot of wins in the UFC, dating back to his debut in 2006. So he's dangerous. But Jorge Rivera has kind of been a journeyman through the sport. Really hasn't won any big titles or anything. Hasn't fought any huge names, you know. But he has fought some tough guys. He's coming off a 3-fight win streak. UFC Fight Night 18 in 2009, he won against Neeson Osternek. I never heard of, but doesn't mean he was a good fighter. That was a split decision. And he had a TKO win over Rob Kimmins back in October of 2009 on the third round TKO. And the last fight with Nate Quarry back in March of 2010. That was TKO punches 29 seconds to the second round. He's fought guys like Kendall Grove, Terry Martin, Edwin DeWeese, Chris Lieben. Lost to Lieben and Martin. Lost to Anderson Silva back in 2005 at Cage Rage 11. So he's definitely got the experience. He's from Massachusetts, too. So I've seen him around at some of the events. He trains out of Milford, Massachusetts. So we'll definitely be rooting for him. But he might just be a little bit outclassed in this fight, although I kind of don't like Bisping for some reason. I like to see him get beat. this is those guys, you know. I think it was probably because of his, he made some comments about Matt Ham before Matt Ham will beat him. But anyway. We also have a couple more interesting fights to talk about. And this fight, obviously, it's on a Sunday, which is very rare, but probably part of the reasoning behind that is because it's in Australia. It's in New South Wales, Australia, Sydney. And it's a good thing they didn't decide to have it in New Zealand. Because, I don't know if you heard about that big earthquake, but...
I did, actually.
Pretty bad. Third fight on the list here is George Sotiropoulos versus Dennis Seaver. I don't know much about either one of these guys, but I have seen both of them fight. Sotiropoulos is 14-2. He's coming off a win against Jules Dazon by Kimura submission back in November of last year at UFC 123. He's on a 8 fight win streak. His last loss was to Shinya Aoki because he kicked him in the nuts. And 5 seconds into the second round, jeez, that was quick. That was back when he was in Shuto. He got disqualified for a ground strike there. He's beaten since then a few big names: George Roop, Jason Dent, Joe Stevenson, Kurt Pellegrino, and Joe Zorn. Dennis Seaver, on the other hand, he's 17-7. His last fight was against Andre Winner, who was on one of the Ultimate Fighter episodes, or one of the seasons there, the UK versus the United States. He beat Winner by submission, rear naked choke, at UFC 122 in the first round. It says 3:37 mark back in November. And we had Spencer Fisher before that. He beat at the Ultimate Fighter 11 finale in June of 2010. That was a unanimous decision. And he had a loss against another UK versus US alumni from the Ultimate Fighter from UFC Fight Night 21 back in March of last year. But other than that, he's got wins against Dale Hart and Paul Kelly in the two fights before that. In his debut in the UFC was back at UFC 70 in 2007. Nations collide. But he's been fighting since 2004. So he's got quite a well-rounded background. I think Sotiropoulos is just too good these days. He's just an amazing athlete all around. And he likes submissions. 8 of his 14 wins come by submissions. So look for the fight then now if he wins. And we also have an old guest we've had on a couple times, Chris Lytle, fighting Brian.
Yeah.
And Lytle's a big fan of boxing, always tries to keep the fight standing up when he can. Does a great job at it too, I think. That's Chris Lytle. His record is 30-17, 5 draws. And he also likes the submissions. 21 of his fights have ended in submissions. And his last fight was actually September of 2010. He had a unanimous decision over Matt Serra. He's on a 4-fight win streak. He's also got wins over Matt Brown, submission win, in July of 2007. And Brian Foster, submission by knee bar back in February of 2010 in the first round. And his last loss was to Marcus Davis, who is now out of the UFC. That was back in UFC 93 in January of 2009. He's also got losses to Josh Koscheck and Thiago Alves. And the Matt Serra win was a rematch of a loss back in 2006 at the Ultimate Fighter 4 finale. Yeah, he's been in the UFC since UFC 45 when he lost to Robbie Lawler.
Oh, and how many UFCs have been out? 130 or something?
127. This is the 127.
Okay.
But that doesn't include the fight nights and the fight for the troops things that they do in the Ultimate Fighter finales. Because those don't have numbers, so it's probably more like 200 at this point, at least, I would think, but I could be wrong. I haven't seen it in the past. Anyway, we're going to look at Brian Ebersole is 46-14. Yikes. Oh, I think I know who this guy is. This is actually the guy that I had mentioned, I think, over a year ago now. There was a fight in Australia where he was fighting for a card. It was kind of shady. Nobody got paid. There was a big scandal afterwards. And he was doing this move where he would bend over and punch the guy in the leg. I've never seen it before. That was, Impact FC1, the Uprising in Brisbane. That's what it was back in July of 2010. So it wasn't quite that long ago. But he beat Carlos Newton by decision. And that was one of the things that softened the guy up, because instead of going for the leg kicks, he would go for the leg punches. And I don't know if that's a traditional thing in the UFC, but whoever's going against this guy is going to have to look out for that. But Ebersole's got quite the record. He's never been in the UFC before. This is going to be his UFC debut, but he's been everywhere else, it seems. Strikeforce, we got Total Combat Challenge, Cage Rage, CFC, Cage Fighting Championships. He's been on a ton of different cards. And he's on 7 fight win streak. I believe no huge names that he's gone against, except maybe Carlos Newton. That's a pretty big name. He beat him, like I said, at that Uprising. And that was a good fight. It was pretty decent. But he won in the end. So that should be a pretty good fight. I mean, Wilder's going to have his work cut out for him. But if Ebersole wants to use the punches, he's going to have to use a strategy against the guy who knows how to punch. I don't think his last opponent was that good.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just got a very urgent instant message.
What is that?
One of our favorite all-time listeners is live listening to us right now, has requested a shout-out from the tornado, and I'm going to accommodate. I gave this person a new nickname as of a few days ago. So I'd like to say hello out there to my good friend, Gianna 26% Carpani. Hi, Gianna.
26%.
Would you like to know what the
26%
means?
Yes, of course.
Rich, and I think you did it back in the day when I first started it. Yeah, you did, because you actually had a question on one of my answers. The How Well Do You Know Tony quiz that I did on Facebook.
Right.
And Gianna, who's known me her entire life practically, because I remember seeing her when she was just an infant, and I've known, you know, her father for 26, 27 years, only scored 26% on how well she knows me.
Yikes.
Now, let's take a look. Rich Bergeron, on the other hand, got 46% back in the day. So he did a little bit better.
Whoa. So I know you almost 25% more than she does.
Yeah, you know me 20% better than she does.
That's wild.
And you've only known me for a handful of years, technically.
Right.
The one question that you got, I think you got it. Let me look at your answers. Because the one question, I know you got it right. You had to get it right. Because if you didn't get it right, you know, I'm very disappointed with you. Where the hell are your answers at? One that she got wrong, that you got right. My first question on there was, who did I fight in my last boxing match at Lock Haven University? And she said Mike Ward. If this question was who did I fight in my first boxing match at Lock Haven University, it would have been correct answer. But which got it right? The correct answer was Michael Jordan. Yes, people, Michael Jordan is not just a basketball player.
Yes.
And he was no match for the tornado.
He's a former boxer from the National Collegiate Boxing Association. And he was pretty good. He was all right. He's a good inside fighter. If I had gone against him as my first fight of the tournament, I probably would have done a lot better. But I really honestly went in there with a strategy to take it easy for the final fight and try to coast through that matchup. And unfortunately, I didn't learn to stay with
him. If I would have known you back then, I would have given you a scouting report. And that scouting report being, Jordan is a guy you can't let get comfortable. You can't let come forward. You have to keep him back on his heels, and you have to keep pressure on him. If you let him dictate the pace, he's going to want a very slow pace, a very methodical pace, and he's going to want to, be able to come forward. If you get him backing up and you don't let him jab and you don't let him throw punches stepping into him and you set the pace and force him to work, he had no chance. That's why I was able to beat him, and that's why Mark Sletten from Air Force was able to beat him. I know you think Sletten actually took him the third round, because I was researching that the other day when I was writing my article. It was a stoppage in the third.
At the Nationals? I thought it was a quick knockout.
Oh, no. It was third round, because I remember it, because Sletten put pressure on him, and Jordan, I remember watching a fight, because obviously I was rooting for Jordan. I knew him, and I didn't want a person 6'7" winning. And I remember I was yelling to Mike. I was like, come on. I was like, don't let him pressure you. Use angles. Fight him from the outside. And I was like, obviously he couldn't, beat him by reach. I was like trying to say, stay on the outside. Let the guy come into you, because Sletten used to like to fight very aggressively. Even though he was so tall, he would get he would try to use his long arms and come straight at you. I was telling Jordan, if he comes at you, you step to the side and then let him run into the punches and use the angle to, disadvantage his reach. And Jordan just stood right in front of him. I'm like, Jesus Christ. He landed one or two good shots, but obviously, Sletten just, wore him down. And it was the third round. I got the book right in front of me.
All right. Well, then
you know. I know. I'm
reading
it.
We're just going to run down the rest of this card real quick. We got Kyle Noak facing Chris Camozzi. Noak is 18-4-1. Camozzi's 14-3. And then for the rest of the card, we got another UK versus US Ultimate Fighter alumni, Ross Pearson, fighting Spencer Fisher, who's been around forever. I actually saw him at UFC 78 person. I went down there for the science thing. We got Nick Ring, who actually got kind of eliminated from the last Ultimate Fighter, from the show that he was on anyway, versus Ricky Fukuda. And I guess if you pronounce that wrong, it could be Fukuda. It's not a good name for an American guy, or for a guy to have in America. But that's pretty funny. And Nick Ring was the guy that everybody was wondering whether he was gay or just putting on an act, because, he was very, very girlish on the show. He claimed that he was just putting on an act, but two wheels to me. But anyway, we also have Kurt Warburton versus Peach Jutusko. Probably not pronouncing that right. There was another tough to pronounce name. Tai Quan Zhang fighting Jason Reinhardt. And Alexander Gustafsson versus James Tehuna. Mark Hunt and Chris Tuscher are two bloods from the past, at heavyweight, fighting each other. The Crowbar is Tuscher's nickname. He's 21-3. And his last fight was a loss to Brendan Schaub. He was TKO'd in the first back in July of 2010. This is one of those documentaries I want to watch. Two big guys banging like that. It's bound to be exciting. Mark Hunt goes way back in the UFC. He's only 5-7. They call him the Super Samoan. But he goes back to 2004. He was in Pride, Dream, K1, and now he's coming back for the UFC. So he actually was never in the UFC. I shouldn't say he was. Out here we have Anthony Parash versus Tom I don't really have too much to talk about, unfortunately. And then we have about 40 minutes left. There is a story here, kind of in the same lines as the females in wrestling. Now the females have broken another barrier in mixed martial arts. There is a game called Supremacy MMA, The Underground Fighter, coming out in late spring, and it's going to have women. Like Michelle Diablita Gutierrez is a former boxer transitioned to MMA, and Felice Herrick will be part of the game. And Supremacy MMA is a kind of hybrid game whose pitchman, former lightweight champ Jens Pulver, considers more of a fighting genre game than a sports simulation. It's a graphic depiction of blood and broken bones, militarized MMA fans who remember the lawless days that gave the sport a bad mainstream rep before big promotions like the UFC cleaned it up. So it should be interesting. And I haven't checked up on our other former guest there, Holly Holm. Did in her MMA debut, but I'm curious, so I'm going to have to look it up. See what happened. I think she's already had it. Holly Holm. I think of fun stuff, Holly. Did you have anything that you wanted to cover before we sign off?
No, man, I thought I had everything I wanted to go over.
Holly Dunaway. That's what it was. So I'll leave you an update on there as soon as I find it. I don't really see anything here, unfortunately. Well, I'll have to update everybody on that next week, I think. Oh, wait, here we go. This might be it. It's funny, when you look up per name, like, our stories show up, like, 1, 2, and 3. Update everybody when it happens.
Yeah.
If it already happened, I'll talk about it next week. We'll get a result on that. Other than that, I got nothing left. It's about
6:20. I'm feeling better. You know, I'm working the mitts again. My pops is doing good. We're working out really hard. And you never know. Maybe next year. Battle of the Badges, well, I guess that would be 3 or 4. Might have to bring me out of retirement.
Yeah, right. Well, I just got an offer to fight some guy who came over from skateboarding in Australia. Then he decided to do MMA, and now he wants to do boxing. And I saw his boxing debut against the guy. Unfortunately, he's a middleweight, though. I don't know if I can make that weight. It'll be tough. But if I stay out here in Vegas, you never know.
Even if I fly, I don't think I could have made that weight.
Yeah.
The only thing I ever got was 165, and I killed myself to do it.
Yeah, I doubt I'm going to make the weight, but it would be interesting. He's from L.A., so if they pay the expenses for me to go to L.A., hell yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, in L.A., you can't turn that to them.
But there's a couple gyms around here that I might try to get into if I'm going to be having an extended stay, like it seems. And one of them is Johnny Tacos. So sounds like an Italian place. Trying to get an inroad with that guy is a little drive down the street, but maybe they'll give me an incentive to run there. Get my running back on. Been slacking out here in Vegas, but I'll be back in the mix soon enough. Till then. guess till next week, I should say. We will be signing off.
All right.
Thanks for everybody. Next week we will definitely have a guest. I apologize for slacking off in that regard. We'll get her done. So, see you next week, folks.
Later, dudes.